Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
In Mid-Mo, Sports Radio is KLPW-FM, Steelville, Rolla, a Mid-Missouri media station, ESPN 107.3. ESPN 107.3 presents the Mid-Mo Sports Show. Analysis, opinions, and predictions. It's the local sports show on ESPN 107.3. Now, the Mid-Mo Sports Show.
Let me tell you the story of how it began from the small town.
This is the Mid-Mo Sports Show.
Yes, that's right. This is the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in on this cold Monday in South Central Missouri. Hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving holiday, extended weekend. John, you're back from traveling the world for your Thanksgiving.
Traveling all the way to Arkansas. That's traveling the world, right?
Way out there. How was your experience in Hot Springs?
Oh, I got to tell you, and the only reason I'm telling you this is because I have my wife's permission.
Okay.
But we went mountain biking.
Yeah.
And got on the wrong trail. We intended to be on a beginner's trail and ended up on a much more than beginner's trail. So she hit something and fell over backwards.
Oh, no.
But the best part was she was on her back. You know the pictures in the cartoons of the dead animals are always in their back with their feet
with
up?
With their
you
feet
know?
Up?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So she's on her back, still holding on to the bike, wheels spinning up in the air, feet on the pedals. I had to go and pick the bike up off of her, you know.
So were you guys, did you take mountain bikes with you?
Yeah, we did.
I know you're usually more of a street biker.
Right. Okay. We took mountain bikes with us because we'd read ahead that there were some trails here.
Okay.
And but she wasn't badly hurt, just a little bruised.
Good.
But,
and was able to finish.
Oh, yeah. We went on. We did find the right trail
and
went on and rode for quite a while. But, yeah, we were at Lake Hamilton, which is a real pretty place.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, nice.
And you told me you had a very elegant Thanksgiving dinner.
We did. My wife baked a pumpkin pie before we left.
Nice.
And
took
some turkey breasts in the cooler, your favorite turkey there.
Ugh.
And we were in a little condo with a kitchenette, you know, so we could actually cook right there. And so that was nice.
I've always considered turkey the redheaded stepchild of meats. Really, nobody wants it, you know?
So tell me about your Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving was a huge disappointment's the wrong word. It was, it just didn't go the way we expected. We were supposed to be heading in the direction towards Arkansas as well down south, but found out the place we were going to go, which was going to be a kind of a big roughing it, no cell reception, living in a barn loft for 4 days type thing with Becca's family.
Right.
That all got blown up the night we were supposed to leave because the barn loft had been hit by lightning and there was no power.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, so we ended up pivoting and decided, well, I guess we'll just stay home for Thanksgiving. And then the next morning, my wife woke up and was extremely sick, and then the two girls got sick. And basically we spent the entire from Wednesday till Sunday at home, which I have to say, at first blush, you know, disappointment wasn't what we'd planned on. We enjoy going down to Becca's uncle's place down south. But in hindsight, it was kind of cool. I know my kids didn't necessarily love being cooped up in the house for 4 days, but I said to Becca at one point, you know, we may never get to do this again while the kids are at home because usually over the holidays, you just go, go, go. You're
exactly.
busy. And so it was nice to really have nothing
to
do. And that's exactly what we did. It was a whole lot of nothing.
Everybody got over their illnesses?
Yeah, everybody's good. Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
okay.
We're good now as far as that goes. So, but hey, we got a great show for you. I hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving, but it's time to get back to business. One of the great parts of the Thanksgiving holiday is the sporting events that you get to enjoy, of course, the NFL on Thanksgiving, but there's great college football over the weekend as well. I don't wade into college football very much, but I do have something college football related that I want to talk about a little bit later in the show. We've actually got a pretty big show for you planned. We're going to be talking to Dan Israel at 4:30 about the Chiefs and their, I don't know any other word other than epic, historic, I guess, game against the Rams, which was played right at a week ago. And I want to talk to him about that as we head into this. Well, the Chiefs had their bye week this past Sunday. I want to talk about what the last part of the schedule looks like for this team and get his thoughts on a historic loss for the Chiefs in a game that's going to be remembered for a long time by a lot of people. Plus, we've got Brian Stull with St. Louis Baseball Weekly joining us at 5:15 to talk about the Cardinals offseason and if he's hearing anything, because I know everybody's anxious to find out what's the first big move that the Cardinals are going to make. So we're going to wade into that as well. So lots to cover. But as always, if you want to be a part of the conversation, you've got something on your mind, you can call me at 573-364-1045. That number's 573-364-1045. Something that caught my attention over the last week was the fact that the great Mike Matheny, former Cardinals manager, former genius, former all coach of the millennium, already has a new job. Now, I didn't think anybody would be anxious to hire Mike Matheny. Longtime listeners of the show, longtime fans of the show know that me and Mike, I wouldn't say we're bros, you know? He wasn't my favorite manager of all time.
That'd be one way to put it.
Yeah. Now, I was consistent in my criticism of him over the last 4 years. Yes, it's gone that far back. But I like him as a person, kind of. I never liked the way that he treated media. I liked the way that he loved Jesus, so that's something I like about him. But as a coach, I thought he was the worst. He is strict adherence to old school baseball mentality, held this team back tremendously. You know, everybody wants to point back to Mike Matheny's success as a coach, or excuse me, as a manager early in his career with the Cardinals. But as I said, and will continue to say, so much of that was predicated on him inheriting a unbelievable roster, a World Series winning roster, when they won in 2011, that he inherited from Tony La Russa. And I guess some credit should be given for his ability to keep that nucleus together for a few years, but ultimately it all came crashing down. And it, when it became his guys and his team, he consistently mismanaged them. He has no idea how to run a bullpen. He has no idea how to develop young talent. He consistently made weird choices with players, putting them in positions where mentally they were fragile. And I don't know. I'm sure we could roll back the tape and we could find it, that it exists somewhere. But not once can I recall a player saying that they liked playing for Mike Matheny. Not once. Now, you've got Blues players that have played for three different fired coaches and have said that they liked playing for those fired coaches. But I can't remember anyone that said that about Matheny. And in the wake of everything that I just said, including using the big word predicated, you can look that up if you need to, Matheny has a job. Now, who in the world would hire a guy like what I just described? Well, look no further, friends, than your Kansas City Royals. That's right. The Royals, who won a whopping, I think, 56 games this year. That's an 162-game season, folks. Maybe it was 58. That team decided that it would be a good idea to hire Mike Matheny as a special advisor. His actual title is special advisor over several – he will serve in several aspects of the baseball operations department, including scouting and player development, the thing that he sucks at oh so very much, John. Now, the good news is, to the Royals, he probably seemed like, meh, not too shabby. This guy won about 30 games more than we did this year. Maybe he's got something to offer. But let me be clear. Clear beyond a shadow of a doubt. Mike Matheny has nothing to offer the Kansas City Royals. And if your franchise is pulling Mike Matheny off the scrap heap, which is exactly what the Royals are doing, dark times indeed. I mean, seriously, if I was a Royals fan right now, long walk off a short pier, metaphorically, of course, I'm not actually encouraging that activity. What do you do if you're a Royals fan? How can you have any hope? If you are a player in that franchise, how can you believe that this team is trending in a direction that is positive? I guess the only thing that you can encourage yourself with is this thought. The Cardinals were a place that fired Joe Torre, and we know the success that he went on to have with the Yankees in his career. So maybe, just maybe, it wasn't Mike Matheny's fault. Maybe it was just a bad fit. Maybe he is a genius, and the Cardinals just never unleashed his full genius potential. But you and I both know that's baloney. He is exactly who we thought he was, and the Royals are getting exactly who we think they're getting. This is the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Hey, we're going to take a 3-minute commercial break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
What's this? Don't have any online friends, Bunky. Follow Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3 online. Click like at facebook.com/ESPN1073 and follow on Twitter at ESPN1073.
Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday. If you want to be a part of the conversation, don't be bashful. Give me a call, 573-364-1045. It's 573-364-1045. One thing that I was thankful for, John, over this Thanksgiving holiday was the fact that another installment in the Rocky movie franchise came out.
You're kidding me.
I'm a sucker for Rocky movies.
What is this? Rocky what? Well, 6, 7,
no,
10?
We've moved on now. There's a new boxer. Rocky's not the boxer anymore. Now he's the trainer. So these new movies are called Creed. He's training Apollo Creed's son, Adonis Creed. And this is the second of the Creed movies.
Oh. Do you remember movie Airplane?
Of course.
Yeah, remember the poster in Airplane, Rocky 26 or whatever that was?
If they only knew how on the
nose
that prediction would be. But I have to tell you, I'm a huge sports movie fan. And as far as sports movie franchises, Rocky's the top for me. It's the pinnacle. Now, is that because every Rocky movie made is just so rich in plot development and drama? And suspense and just really leaves you guessing? No, of course not. But for me, it gives me everything that I want in a sports movie. I have often held to the adage, John, that boxing movies make the best sports movies, which I think is funny because, I mean, nobody watches boxing for real anymore. So why is it that we are still so drawn to boxing movies? I mean, I think of movies like Cinderella Man, which, for the record, I think is underrated in its greatness in the history of sports movies. A movie like Warrior, which I guess counts as a boxing movie. What was the movie with it's going to drive me crazy, with Christian Bale and Mark Wahlberg? For the life of me, I can't think of it. But anyway, those are great movies. But Rocky is the pinnacle of boxing movies, and how they continue to find ways to make this story relevant while still embracing the kitschiness that has made those movies so popular to someone like me. It's just astounding. It really is. And Michael B. Jordan has done a great job picking up the mantle. I thought this was just fantastic. Who doesn't want a good revenge story? And this is the story of Ivan Drago's son, seeking revenge on behalf of his father against Rocky, who isn't boxing but is training someone that Ivan Drago killed. Spoiler alert for a movie that's 40 years old. That happened in Rocky IV many moons ago.
Have you seen the new Rocky movie yet?
Yeah, I went and watched it over Thanksgiving.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Day before Thanksgiving, me and my son Keaton went, and it's awesome.
Has he seen all the rest of them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love the fact that I have been able to suck one of my children into being a fan because, you know, you don't know as a parent when you share some of the things that are just pure nostalgia for you if they're going to take to it. I think Star Wars is a great example. For many kids, they don't understand why we are so drawn to the original Star Wars trilogy. That's not necessarily the case with my kids, but my kids enjoy the new ones as much as the old ones. And to someone in my generation, many of them would say that's sacrilegious. And so whenever you accomplish that, it's a very fulfilling thing. So I say all this to say boxing movies are awesome. Rocky movies are the best boxing movies. And you need to go watch the first Creed if you haven't seen it, and then go to the theater and watch Creed 2. You're welcome, local Rolla Movie Theater and Waynesville. You got your free plugs. And Lebanon, for that matter. We reach all the way out there.
That's right.
Sullivan, excuse me.
And Lebanon.
We reach, yeah, well, there you go. I don't know if Lebanon has a
movie. Oh, no, Lebanon's sunny, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so moving on from that. Speaking of things that I don't understand why people would watch, why on God's green earth did anybody, I mean anybody at all, want to watch Tiger versus Phil one-on-one? I don't understand it. I really don't. Even if you're a golf fan, why is that something that people were clamoring for? A $9 million winner-take-all match. $9 million. Now, I'm going to follow up the $9 million thought and hot sauce, weak sauce at the end of the show. A little nugget I'm going to share with you that you will not want to miss, so make sure you stay tuned in for that. And remember, too, if you're tuned into the show and you missed part of it, you can tune in through the podcast. Go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast. If you don't have iTunes, you can go to Blog Talk Radio. You can go to iHeartRadio. So many different ways to listen to the show. So I would highly encourage you to do that. But in a match that I could not have cared less for, Phil Mickelson beat Tiger Woods on the, I think, like 20th hole, maybe 22nd hole. I think it was the 22nd hole to win. Now, first of all, taking guys that are already enormously wealthy and offering them a pot of $9 million is not going to draw me in as a fan. I don't care. And the sad thing to me is $9 million is what it took for these yahoos to do this? Really? I just don't buy into the I want to do this because I want to beat Phil. In a mano-a-mano type situation, I want nasty. I want bitter. I want disdain. Now, it was clear with some of the things Phil said at the end of the match, during the match a little bit, that he wanted this way more than Tiger did. I think Phil had way more to prove with this. But the reality is, no amount of one-on-one $9 million matches is going to change Phil Mickelson's legacy when compared to that of Tiger. For some, he will be their favorite no matter what. But he will never be able to match Tiger's career accomplishments. It's not going to happen. He's not even going to be close. So much of Phil Mickelson's career was wrapped up in the idea of choking and disappointment when the stakes were highest, I guess. And this win in this situation does nothing to change that, nor could it ever. They could play 50 one-on-one matches and Phil win 40 of those, and it's not going to change the fact that when they are evaluated at the end of their careers, Tiger will always, by everyone, be the winner. It's not even a competition. Will you look up for me, John, how many major golf wins Tiger Woods has and how many major golf wins Phil Mickelson has? Major is an important word there. It's It's just a joke. Now, I will say this. One thing that was cool, one thing that I want more of as a sports fan is behind-the-scenes access. And these guys were mic'd up for basically the entire match. So we got to hear the banter. We got to hear them talking to their caddies. We basically got to hear everything, which included them breathing, which was extremely annoying. I would think for two professional golfers, they wouldn't be that short-winded walking around a golf course, but what do I know? I mean, I do have a radio show, and I breathe, and you don't hear me going, so that got old. But I did like the behind-the-scenes access. You know, I would love to listen to what goes on in a huddle consistently in an NFL game. That behind-the-scenes stuff, I think that stuff's pretty cool. I would love that in just about any sport. I know it's not practical, but for me, that was about the only good takeaway. And the fact that you had to pay $20 to watch this? I mean, come on, man.
All right, just going by PGA Championships.
Yes.
Yes, Phil Mickelson's won 43. Tiger Woods has won 80.
And what about majors?
So majors, 14 majors for Tiger Woods. And they didn't list majors in Wikipedia for Phil Mickelson.
Okay. It's
they had five championships, three Masters titles, one PGA title,
that's
and
oh,
one Open.
Okay, so that's five.
Okay.
So 14 to 5, and Tiger has basically doubled him in career wins, period.
Right, right.
I mean, come on, guys. Like, I don't know why Phil feels like he needs to prove himself. I don't, because he doesn't. He really doesn't. I mean, Phil is great, but he's not going to be considered the greatest, and he will never be considered the greatest of his generation. Why can't people be content with great? Last I checked, great is great. I realize that's not a newsflash, but Phil's just got this chip on his shoulder. And look, it kind of stinks for Phil. If he was born in a different era, maybe Phil's legacy would have been even better. But Phil is still beloved by all of America. Phil Mickelson is a lovable runner-up. That's what he is. Who's had a tremendous career. 40 wins is awesome. Five majors, tremendous. For a guy that started off his career with so many disappointing finishes in majors, five is nothing to shake a stick at. I don't know where that puts him in the all-time list of major wins, but he's on it. He's on the list. But come on, people. Can we stop with this one-on-one golf crap? I mean, if you're watching golf, you want action. You want shot after shot after shot. That's the benefit of watching golf during tournaments, is you can bounce from player to player to player. I don't care about one-on-one. I love the Ryder Cup. I do, which is a lot of match play like this. But even with Ryder Cup match play, it's interesting because they've got 6 to 10 matches going on. So you're still bouncing between multiple. When there's only like three matches going on, it's almost unbearable, the stoppages sometimes. And they are really lucky this ended up being close. Because if one of those two had run out ahead early in this thing, it would have been dog poop to watch. And neither of them even played particularly well. So there's that, too.
And I suppose they were walking, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they had to breathe so heavy.
Right.
For walking. They don't even carry their golf bag, John. You just walk around and swing a golf club. All right, let's take a commercial break. This is the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. When we come back, Dan Israel with the Chiefs Radio Network will be joining us, so don't go anywhere.
Hey, life's about sports. Everything else just gets in the way. Right now, you're listening to sports.
Come on, man, sports.
Sports is life. We specialize in it at Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3.
To the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday. joining us as he always does at 4:30 on Mondays is Dan Israel with the Chiefs Radio Network. Dan the man, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Justin. How's your Thanksgiving, man?
It was mediocre, but that's okay. did you have a good one?
Yeah, well, compared to that, I must have.
I mean, I got to give you an honest answer, right? You know?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Hey, but listen, we had a whole week off from each other, and in the meantime, our team played what I saw the day after to be considered by ESPN to be the greatest regular season NFL game ever. And you were there. Tell me, what was it like?
Well, I think normally I would say if a week passed before we talked about a game, I would say, I honestly don't remember it. That was a week ago. But this game, on the other hand, that game may have been the most exciting. It was the most exciting regular season game I think I've ever been a part of. The Joe Montana Monday Night Football game in Denver, that was exciting as well because it was hard fought. It was a back and forth game, just like this one, kind of finished at the last minute, last guy to have the ball. It didn't necessarily go that way this time, but I'll tell you what, I have never seen 14 touchdowns scored in a single football game. I can tell you that.
It was absolutely unbelievable, and it's one of those games I don't even know how you really break it down. And I don't want to necessarily get into the minutia of the game, but since we've had a bye week to kind of reflect on what we saw, it certainly lived up to the hype and then some, which I didn't think was possible with the amount of hype that had been generated for it. But what were for you, Dan, some takeaways from the game now that you've had a little bit of time to digest it?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, one of the anomalies about this is you can't break it down statistically. 14 TDs.
Unbelievable.
1,000-plus yards, 105 points. I mean, there's no stat that we track in the NFL that would lead you to believe. And here's the other thing. If I told you 105 points were scored in a football game, you would ask me, well, did either defense show up whatsoever?
Right.
But when you look at this game, Justin, it really kind of had a defensive component to it at times. It was fun. I mean, it was exciting. The defense made some huge plays on both sides of the ball. I mean, for both teams. And I don't know, it was just such a different game. It was a little more like a tennis match where you just watched it go left, right, left, right, left, right. But what an exciting night to be a part of. The other thing I thought was interesting, and this is less about football than the moment, but in the Coliseum, the lights of the Coliseum are very old and they shine on the field, but they don't light the stands up much.
Oh, interesting.
So, As you get further from the field, it just kind of fades into black.
Hey Dan, we've got a pretty bad connection with you right now. Could we?
It's like a cartoon or a dream, watching the field because you couldn't see it.
Hey Dan, can you hear me? We've got a pretty bad connection. We've got a pretty bad connection. We're going to try calling you back if that's okay. So we'll give Dan a call back here in just a second. John, see if you can get him back on the line there. Not sure what happened. But, yeah, I have to say, for me, I've never seen anything like that game before. The second half alone was just completely chock full of awesome. Is he back? Okay, Dan, you there?
Justin, you there?
Yeah, sorry, we lost you. We had a pretty bad connection there.
Well, if I told you where I was, you'd understand why.
I got you. Okay. Where we lost you basically was talking about how the lights don't light the stands very well, but they light the field.
Yeah. So you couldn't really tell where the top of the stadium stopped and the sky started. It just kind of, the fans and the stadium all kind of blended into blackness. So it was very ethereal.
That is so interesting.
Kind of surreal.
Yeah. Was it a mostly Rams crowd or did the Chiefs fans travel pretty well? I realize that seems like a dumb question, but LA has a history of not coming out for games. So,
well, I was shocked because Chiefs fans did travel well, but just with a few days' notice for them to sell as many Rams tickets as they did was shocking. And I'm sure it has something to do with the Rams at the time were 9-1.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, they're doing well, but they definitely filled those seats with some fans, and they were loud, Justin, man. It wasn't Arrowhead loud, but it was loud. It was at times, it was hard to play football for Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I think that's the perfect situation for Patrick Mahomes in his young NFL career to have to be faced with, where it's basically a playoff-type atmosphere, and there was some real adversity in that game. And obviously, we don't come out on the other side of this thing, but that's got to be good for his development as we have one eye on the playoffs now.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you're going to lose a game, lose one in the out of the conference, you
right,
know,
right.
It hurts you the least. But I think one thing that Patrick Mahomes learned from last Monday night was Aaron Donald's a beast. Yeah. And there are guys in this league that can catch you. Don't forget about them. You may think you've evaded them, but they will catch up to you. And eventually when they get there, they're going to do bad things. And that's what Aaron Donald did.
Aaron Donald is not a human being. I'm convinced of that.
I agree.
That was the first time this year, I think, that I've seen this offensive line really get pushed around a little bit. And I was a little surprised by that because I thought the way that our offensive line had played that we would not necessarily be able to hold the Rams defensive line at bay, but to do a little bit better job than they ended up doing. Are you there? We lost him again. That's all right. Well, let's try him one more time, John. We'll see if we can get him back. Hey, Danny, you there? Yep. We'll try one more time. I was so excited to talk to him about the game too. But hey, that is the challenge when you've got modern technology. So let me know when we got him. Look, I thought it was the perfect environment for Patrick Mahomes to really sharpen his knife. You've got him, Dan. Let's try it. Third time's a charm. I promise.
I hope so.
All right. So hey, shifting gears a little bit, can we talk about the Eric Berry situation? I brought it up with you a lot, but this is the first week that I can remember probably all season where there seemed to be some positive chatter. In fact, I was listening to a guy on ESPN speak emphatically that Eric Berry was going to be on this team actively playing before the playoffs start. I don't know where that came from. Have you heard anything that corroborates that idea?
The only thing I've heard is that this is the first time in hundreds of days, that I've heard anything I've heard anything come out of Coach Reed's mouth except it's day to day.
Okay.
And he said today that he would check with him, see how Eric was feeling. But, you know, in my opinion, Justin, it's now or never with Eric Berry.
How does he even possibly get in game shape in time if he doesn't start playing this week or next? I mean, is he able to stay in game shape?
He's been working out a lot.
Okay. But he can't run on that.
The problem with it is, exactly, you can't get up to speed. These guys are fast. And it is not just, you know, you can't do this on your own.
We're just gonna have to drop it. Dan, if you can still hear me, I apologize, but the connection's just no good, man. So, I apologize for that to our listeners and to Dan, but we'll be back next week with Dan as we head into the Raiders game, which they're going to be playing on Sunday. That's a late game on Sunday against the Raiders. So looking forward to that. Just a few more thoughts on that game for the Chiefs. I listened to Colin Cowherd, and I thought he had an interesting take on this where he basically said, despite the fact that he has seen this Chiefs team lose to the Patriots and he has seen this Chiefs team now lose to the Rams, he is convinced that this is the best team in the NFL. And I thought that was really interesting because – you don't usually say that coming off of losses in big games to big teams, but when you consider that this team had to go on the road for both of those games, you've got to believe playing in Kansas City, that's the difference for this team in those games. I mean, those are very difficult, very hostile environments to have to travel to and play, and this team acquitted itself very well in both situations and very easily could have won either of those games. Did they win? Obviously not, but this team for the most part has been able to stay healthy. I am a little concerned about the Sammy Watkins injury. What Sammy Watkins provides to this offense is extremely valuable, and the extra balance that it brings to how a defense has to play us. But you can see what Tyreek Hill is capable of when Sammy Watkins isn't out there. 10 receptions, 215 yards, absolutely unbelievable game. You had Travis Kelce who had 10 catches and 127 yards. I don't understand why the team played Sammy Watkins in that game. I really don't. It makes no sense to me at all whatsoever. Sammy Watkins had no business being on that field if he was going to be pulled shortly after the game began. They never should have tried to force that to happen. They should have had their eye on the playoffs. They should be playing the long game right now with two losses. This is a playoff team. They still have plenty to play for, as home field advantage is theirs if they can win out. And the schedule is very win-outable, although all of a sudden a game in Seattle looks like it's a lot tougher with the way Seattle's playing right now. The Ravens need to be taken seriously because Lamar Jackson looks like a different kind of a threat. And, of course, the Chargers will be tough, but we've got that game at home with a couple games against the Raiders. So I like our chances to go through the last 5 games with only one loss, finishing maybe 13-3. I think that's very realistic for this team. They could run the table and finish 14-2, but I think there might be one loss left on the board there. But this was a tremendous opportunity for this team to be tested in a playoff-type environment and find out what we were made of. The Rams are great. There's a very real scenario where we see this team again in the playoffs. And, man, I've got to tell you, nothing would make me more happy than to see get to see the Rams again. Not in the playoffs, in the Super Bowl. Sorry, my brain's not working. Hey, let's take a quick commercial break. It's Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Don't go anywhere. 3 minutes, and we'll be back.
Check out the Mid-Mo Sports Show on ESPN 107.3. What's trending locally and regionally, complete with analysis, opinions, and predictions. Mondays from 4 to 6 on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Dan Israel for joining us. He was just in a bad spot. Sometimes just can't do anything about it, so we'll give it another shot next week. But right now it's time for Stupid Tweet of this week.
And now being presented to you live, the Stupid Tweet of the week.
You are so dumb. You are really dumb. Oh, yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm stupid.
Stupid Tweet of the Week.
This week's Stupid Tweet of the Week is brought to you courtesy of the former Steelers running back, Le'Veon Bell, who decided to tweet out on Thanksgiving, or right around it. Happy Turkey Day, tweeters. I'm thankful for life, opportunity, family, and my friends. What are you thankful for? Oh, Le'Veon. Do you know nothing about social media? Are you so unaware of how you are viewed by society right now that you would tweet out on Thanksgiving what people are thankful for? Because first of all, Le'Veon Bell, you're thankful for opportunity? Well, that can't be true because you were paid close to, if not as the highest running back in the NFL, and yet you chose not to play. So you can't be that thankful for opportunity, can you? You can't be thankful for $15 million worth of opportunity. No, sir, you weren't thankful for that. And your friends? You must not mean your friends on the Steelers, because you haven't done them a solid this season. You completely bailed on the team. And the responses to Le'Veon Bell's tweet were incredible. Remember, he asked what they were thankful for. I can't even use some of these. There's so much language in them. James Mother Bleeping Connor was one of the responses. That is Le'Veon Bell's backup, who has played the whole season. I'm thankful that you're no longer running the ball and being injured in every big game we had. I'm thankful for a running back who comes to work. These are some of the incredible responses. I'm very thankful for James Conner. I'm thankful you're not showing up so the Steelers save money and get a better replacement. I'm thankful for $14.5 million in cap space. I'm thankful I drafted James Conner as a handcuff after keeping you in fantasy football. I'm thankful I traded you in fantasy football for Leonard Fournette. I These are great. I can't read most of these. There's too much language. But listen, Le'Veon, you can't open yourself up to this type of exposure, my friend. You need to do a better job of having your finger on the pulse of how America is viewing you in this moment. And I don't know if this is true. This is probably a bit of a stretch, but I can't remember an athlete being chucked under the bus more aggressively than you have since LeBron James decided to do the decision program when he chose to leave Cleveland for Miami. I mean, seriously, dude, you are not going to get middle to lower class America to give two farts about you when you are turning your nose up at $15 million plus and not doing your job. You're leaving everyone on the team hanging. And for what? I still continue to hold out hope that someday, one day, any day, these owners decide to shut you out like they did with Colin Kaepernick. I have no idea if it was collusion or not. But I want the owners to stand up and say, look, we're not going to pay guys that want to hold teams hostage. You agreed to this collective bargaining agreement. Is it within Le'Veon Bell's right to not get paid and not play? Sure. But it's a terrible look. It really is. The peripherals on this are horrible. I can't imagine as a player in the NFL being glad to share a locker room with Le'Veon Bell. I just can't. And that's not hyperbole. I feel that way 100%. Now, shifting gears a little bit to the world of college football, which, you know, I don't wade into too often. But a topic that has really gathered my attention has been the continued success of UCF, who, despite losing their star quarterback for the season, won again this weekend and has not lost a game in two full college football regular seasons. They're still undefeated, and they're still probably on the outside looking in for college football's college playoff. I don't understand how this is a good thing for college football. I really don't. Can I ask you a serious question? From a rating standpoint, from an exposure standpoint, from an interest standpoint, is college football in a better position having Ohio State as one of four teams or having UCF as one of those four teams? They are the Cinderella story. They are the team that doesn't lose. And, you know, I see all the time college football pundits posting things. I saw it this week. If Notre Dame ends up in the playoffs, they'll get steamrolled by anybody else in there. That's such an asinine thing to say. Like, have you not watched football at all? Have you not heard the expression any given Sunday? You do understand how often upsets occur in college football, right? You do know. Who in their right mind said Ohio State was going to completely blow out Michigan this week? Nobody saw that coming. Who in their right mind thought Citadel could play Alabama to a draw for a half 2 weeks ago? Nobody. That's the beauty of football. In a one-game situation, anything can happen and does happen. Ohio State got absolutely slaughtered earlier in the year by Indiana. Nobody predicted that. But it happened. So these people that go out there and they're like, there's no possible way this could happen. It's impossible. You're a moron. I immediately don't listen to anything else you could say. And the idea that UCF would have no chance at all, no chance, is absurd. I mean, let's be realistic. No one thinks anyone has a chance against Alabama. The way that they've played, they look unbeatable. But the reality is they still got to lace them up for two games in the playoffs. And they can lose. No one's going to bet against them, but they could. And in my opinion, UCF has earned the right. I don't care that their strength of schedule is 107th. That really doesn't matter to me. And yes, I understand they're only being evaluated on what they've done this season, but you already screwed them over last year. Two full seasons without losing, and you're not going to let this team have a shot. It's a travesty. And no, I don't care that their quarterback lost. If they go on and beat Memphis in a rematch of the AAC title next week, then they should be there. Now, some good things happened this week that make the road possible. Washington beat one-loss Washington State, kicking Washington State out of the picture. Texas A&M beat LSU in that unbelievable 7-overtime game, knocking LSU out of the picture. So that's a couple teams out of the way. But then you've got teams like Texas, if they win, that could leapfrog UCF. And then you've got a team like Ohio State, who almost certainly is going to leapfrog UCF with their win over Michigan. It's a travesty. And I think it is so short-sighted by the committee to not see the value in having a true, massive underdog who doesn't have a loss playing in that game, in that first game. I really don't see it. I don't understand why they think that's a good thing. America would root for the underdog. Are you kidding me? UCF versus Alabama? I have no idea what kind of a game it would be. It would probably be a slaughter, but what if it wasn't? Because nobody in America other than Alabama residents are going to even consider rooting for Alabama. Not going to happen. We'd be all in on UCF. And it's funny how having a chance, an opportunity that those kids have never had before, how that can change the way that you play, that inspiration that you gain from the possibility of doing the impossible, how that inspires you in a way to play in a way that you never could have before. I'm not asking you to take a 3-loss Memphis and put them in the game. I'm asking you to put a team that hasn't lost in 2 seasons into this. Give them a chance to do the impossible. I don't even feel like it's a big ask. I have long held to the idea that when you lose games in college football, you lose the right to complain about whether or not you make the playoffs. Because in the beginning of the season, everyone holds their destiny in their own hands. And somewhere along the way, losses start to pile up. There's one team that I know of that hasn't lost in 2 years, and that's UCF. Give them that shot. I'm begging you. That would be must-see TV, and that is exactly what college football needs. This is the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. We've got a great second hour for you. Brian Stull with St. Louis Baseball Weekly is going to be joining us to talk about the Cardinals offseason. Looking forward to hearing his thoughts as one of the Cardinals' targets that we thought they were going to go after. Josh Donaldson signed with somebody today. So don't go anywhere. This is the Mid-Mo Sports Show. 3-minute commercial break. He's John Francis. I'm Justin Renaud. We'll be right back.
In Mid-Mo, sports radio is KLPW-FM, Steelville, Rolla, a Mid-Missouri media station, ESPN 107.3. So are you ready to take our friendship to the next level? Follow Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3 online. Like us on Facebook.com/ESPN1073 and follow us on Twitter at ESPN 107.3. This is Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri, ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in. Congratulations on your post-tryptophan hangover Monday workday. If you survived Monday, congratulations. If you didn't, you're clearly not listening right now. Remember, friends, if there's anything you've got on your mind you want to talk to me about, you can call me at 573-364-1045. That's 573-364-1045. We've got Brian Stull with St. Louis Baseball Weekly joining us at 5:15. We're going to talk about the Cardinals' offseason plans and what he's hearing through the grapevine. So you won't want to miss that. Remember, if there's any part of the show at all, any part that you have missed and you want to get caught up, if you've got iTunes, you can subscribe to our podcast where those go up. And on top of that, you can find us on iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, and so much more. So listen, there's all kinds of ways to get caught up on that. This segment is brought to you by Kingdom Kia in Rolla, home of the Warranty Forever, located on North Highway 63. I am sure they're running some awesome deals right now as we head to the end of the year. So go hit them up, Kingdom Kia in Rolla. John, I have to tell you, on the list of things I heard that have shocked me the most this week, this stat about Aaron Rodgers about knocked me off my socks. Aaron Rodgers, who we have been told for years and years now, is one of the top few quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he's always in the conversation of top three or four quarterbacks with the Tom Brady's and the Drew Brees's. I mean, just always the Peyton Manning's. I could not believe this. Aaron Rodgers, the great Green Bay Packer quarterback, is now 0-37 when trailing by more than 1 point in the fourth quarter to a team with a winning record. That's real, people. 0-37 when they are losing by more than 1 point at any point during the fourth quarter. Now, this is a guy that I have been sold a bill of goods on, and that particular stat, it stings a bit. If you're an Aaron Rodgers supporter, I realize there's much more to a quarterback's greatness than their ability to lead a come-from-behind drive. But 0-37? If you want to give us a call, call us 573-364-1045. That's 573-364-1045. Shocking. Now, for a long time, Aaron Rodgers has been considered great. And he did a lot of things early in his career that I think helped substantiate that idea. But what I have seen over the last few seasons, besides a guy that has gotten injured a lot, is a guy who is disgruntled, a guy who is never quick to shoulder blame. And I have to say, that's what true leaders do. They shoulder the blame. They're willing to accept responsibility, not chuck their coach under the bus. I have no idea who's at fault in Green Bay. Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers, everybody else. I really don't know. I know that coaches are generally the first one to get lampooned. And it would surprise me if the Packers miss the playoffs if McCarthy still has a job next year. But that doesn't make the choice the right choice in this instance. Aaron Rodgers comes across in State Farm commercials to be this lovable guy. But there's a lot of things externally that add up to, well, that paint a picture that is broader than that. I don't want to judge a guy I don't know. I really don't know anything about Aaron Rodgers. I know that he has completely shut himself off from his immediate family. I know that he has bounced from celebrity female to celebrity female. But again, like what can I really pull from that? I have no idea. But I know that 0-37 when trailing by more than a point in the fourth quarter of a football game over the course of his career tells me this guy isn't made of the tough stuff that I've been led to believe. And I saw an article that basically said, well, pump the brakes on this maybe Aaron Rodgers isn't great anymore idea by showing clip after clip of him chucking up Hail Marys and those getting caught. Can we agree that the difficulty of a Hail Mary isn't in throwing a ball in the air? It's in the receiver coming down with it? Can someone explain to me why quarterbacks get credit for Hail Mary completions? I mean, really, it's about arm strength and putting it in a general spot and closing your eyes and praying and hoping for the best. That's all a Hail Mary is. I'm not making up. Two Hail Marys were in there as their video evidence of Aaron Rodgers' greatness. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. You know what else is terrible? John, I'm going to play a No Fun League clip for me. You want to play the intro?
I would love to.
No Fun League.
The No Fun League.
Well, this sucks.
It's time for the No Fun League.
Tyreek Hill. We love him as Chiefs fans. Absolutely love him. The guy can do no wrong. And in spite of that, he did wrong. At least in the eyes of the No Fun League. For basically his entire career, Tyreek Hill, when he catches a pass and runs into the end zone, he throws up the peace sign. Now, one wouldn't think, John, the peace sign would be considered offensive, right?
This is an excessive celebration or something, is it?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Okay.
Taunting, excessive celebration. This so-called all-star officiating crew, who were absolutely horrible. If that's the best the NFL has to offer in officials, we are doomed. We are all doomed. Threw a flag for taunting for throwing up the peace sign. I mean, if anything could be considered anti-taunting in football, it would be, hey guys, peace, peace. And this is not a new thing. He's done it his whole career. And on top of the 15-yard penalty, Tyreek Hill got fined $10,026. $10,000 for saying peace, man. Peace. I don't get it, John. I really don't. I don't understand how the No Fun League will let people do excessively incredible celebrations. They will let people jump in the Salvation Army bell, but running into the end zone, they can't throw up a peace sign. Now look, if he was flipping the bird to somebody, sure. If he was berating somebody, sure. If he was gesticulating in an inappropriate manner, sure. But the peace sign? Good night. I have no other conclusion that I can draw from this other than the entire officiating crew was a bunch of millennials who were easily offended. What other conclusion could I possibly draw from that? And here's the part that really irks me the most. I've already told you he got fined $10,000 for this. But the part about that bothers me the most isn't the $10,000. I'm sure Tyreek's going to be fine as far as money goes. It's the fact that the NFL reviewed this and said, yep, we need to follow through on this. No doubt about it. If he's going to taunt players with a peace sign, then he needs to be fined. That's the part that bothers me the most about this. Officials make bad decisions in the heat of the moment, and not always can those things be reviewed. I can totally move on with my life about that. But when the NFL has time to sit back and take in that game and take in that moment, and they still determine that that is worthy of that type of a fine, come on. What is this garbage? There's a reason I call it the No Fun League. And I have to be honest, John, in a game like the Chiefs and the Rams played, there shouldn't be any reason at all that I should be able to call anything in that the No Fun League, period. Because it was the most fun football game I've ever seen during the regular season. It was unbelievable. Even though my team lost, I still feel that way. And yet here we are, just like Eeyore, bemoaning the NFL and their stupid rules and their stupid fines again. Shout out to Eeyore for that. We're going to take a quick commercial break. It's the Midmo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. When we come back, we've got Brian Stull with St. Louis Baseball Weekly. You don't want to miss it. Don't go anywhere.
weekday mornings, Golic and Wingo have the day's top stories and the biggest topics in sports as only they can.
Who wouldn't take that?
Listen mornings from 5 till 9. This is ESPN on the radio. Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Joining us, I'm very excited to get to talk to him, is Brian Stull, whose radio show, St. Louis Baseball Weekly, can be heard on this very station on Fridays from 1 to 2 o'clock. Brian is our resident Cardinals expert, and boy, do we have plenty to talk about. Brian, how are you, my friend? Thanks for joining us.
I am doing great. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving and the belly is still full.
The belly is no longer full. I moved on from that. I can only do turkey leftovers for so many days. How was yours?
Well, I'll be honest. I still did turkey leftovers today and no complaints.
So oh, that's bold.
Likes his turkey.
I have a question. This is the most important question I will ask you today. Dark meat or white meat?
Both.
Oh, wow. You're like a unicorn in the wild. Someone who doesn't have a preference. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, I do. No, I like now. My preference is I like to have both. I don't like to be denied one, so I like both, and I like stuffing and mashed potatoes. I want it all.
I have to be honest with you. I have developed in a very short period of time a passion for turkey wings as my favorite part of the turkey to eat, which is odd because very few people prefer that. But I find it's got mostly dark meat with a little bit of white meat on the outside. And the beauty of that part of the wing for a dark meat guy, which I am, is you don't have to hassle with all the nasty tendons and stuff that are in the leg. It's just the best of all worlds. Plus, you get extra skin.
All right. I'm going to try that next time just on your advice.
I'm telling you, when you and I open a restaurant together, turkey wings will be an appetizer we offer. All right,
I like it.
Shifting to more important things, although what could be more important than talking about food? The Cardinals are in the offseason now, and I've not gotten to talk to you since the offseason begun. And I want to start by asking you a question that will lead us into some other stuff. Now, we've all heard, and I've talked about ad nauseum on this show, things that I identified as the team's needs. And we've talked a little bit about what guys like John Mozeliak have said are the team's needs. But as you step back from this team and you see what we need, what are you identifying in your mind as the top three areas of need for this team, preferably in the order that you see them?
In terms of the order, I think I would go with I think the Cardinals are correct in saying that an additional bat, preferably left-handed, for the middle of the lineup would be big.
Number one.
I probably would still put that number one.
Okay.
So we're in agreement with Mo in that regard. I'm in agreement with Mo in that regard. Something that I haven't heard them talk about as much, excuse me, but I think, and it kind of coincides with that, would be some improved corner defense.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's not to automatically say that what they have is bad, as in Jerko can't field third, or there's no hope for Matt Carpenter at first base. But my point is more, I think they're very strong up the middle with Yadier Molina behind the plate. I think Paul DeYoung's continuing to get better at shortstop. I think Colt Wong is a Gold Glove caliber second baseman. And I think Harrison Bader's going to have some hardware this next year if he's able to play enough innings in center field based on what we saw. So you're strong up the middle. But I think on the corners, and you can look at first and third, and you can look at left and right. They don't have any Gold Glove contenders in that regard. So that would be something that I think could definitely be upgraded. And then I think something that I know the Cardinals have identified, and maybe you want to bump this up to two instead, but they have yet to be able to find a left-handed relief option.
That really is has been the great challenge, I think, of the last, 4 or 5 years for this team, it feels like, finding a legit shutdown left-handed reliever. And with those stated, I think that can lead us into maybe talking about some things a little bit more specifically. don't quote me on this. I think I saw a tweet from John Morosi today that said that the Cardinals he thought would be aggressively in the running for Andrew Miller. Have you heard anything along those lines? And I'm kind of curious your take on Andrew Miller, who has been so dominant over the last 4 or 5 years, but had a down year last year.
Well, I think Andrew Miller fits what they're looking for. And this time of year, adjectives can be misleading.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not to dispute anything that JP may have put out there. But again, how people define what aggressive means versus doing just normal due diligence of all the teams talking to each other and agents and that sort of thing, it's tough to decipher. It's tough to weed through. So does Andrew Miller make sense to talk to and profile for what the Cardinals could be looking for? No question. Do they have the resources to pay the man and offer a multi-year deal? And did John Mozeliak say that despite past failures, they weren't going to necessarily be, you know, once bitten, twice shy in terms of the free agent market and in terms of relief pitching? That's all true. But when you're talking about Andrew Miller, as you mentioned, he had a down year this past year.
Right.
And
right.
There's a lot of mileage on that arm the last 2 years. Was just this past year, hey, you know what? It was a down year. He didn't throw as many innings. He's going to bounce back and be the Andrew Miller that everybody has seen before. Or has he now started the downward trend because of that success that he had, that he still could be really good, but he may not be that same dominant, come in and basically, you know, pitch, you know, 27 innings over the course of 2 days to take you to a World Series.
When you're talking about players that had down years coming off injury, coming off of just below standards performances, you look at a guy like Josh Donaldson. As a Cardinals fan, you wonder what if. I know that he signed with the Braves today, but I'm kind of curious where you fell in the Josh Donaldson camp. I was pretty firmly opposed to it, but when I saw that he was willing to sign a one-year deal, I really like taking chances on guys. Now, I realize how this played out with a particular closer that we did in the beginning of the season last season, but generally, I like those fairly low-risk one-year deals where maybe you're paying a premium for that 1 year, but you bring in a player that's highly motivated to try to get that long-term deal. Where were you on that?
No, I, in terms of philosophy on a one-year deal, I'm with you 100% in that regard. I was in favor of Josh Donaldson, provided that the medicals legitimately checked out. And that's where, you know, teams have access to things that we don't.
Sure.
And that nagging calf injury, you know, is that something that truly was going to be healed? Was there going to be something that, you know, they'd have to work around heading in early into 2019, or was it completely behind him? And, you know, those are things that really only the player, the agent, and, you know, I don't even know if the teams are going to get 100% answer on that until he's actually part of their organization. But in terms of if the Cardinals would have signed Josh Donaldson, I think, hey, that improves him. He profiles, he fits, that sort of needs that additional bat, with the exception of him being a right-handed hitter instead of a left-hander. It does create, you know, you sign a Josh Donaldson, then you've got a couple other moves that you're going to need to do to supplement and move some other pieces around. Which,
sure, sure.
The thing about Josh Donaldson, we've talked about this before, the Cardinals have so many like pieces.
Yep. Yeah,
he's
absolutely
different than that.
He is.
So if you're then trading one of those like pieces, you have changed the team a little bit. And, you know, he's supposed to be a great guy in the clubhouse, so that's always a nice bonus too, leadership-wise, and bringing in some winning, some hunger, that kind of thing would have fit very nicely.
Well, that was a big move for the Braves, a team that really surpassed everyone's expectations last year. So as you look at guys that are still available, the name that I've heard by far the most over the last 7 days or so has been Paul Goldschmidt with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Yeah. Taking a look at a fit for team need, you've got Goldschmidt with 1 year left on his contract, so potentially you're trading for a rental, although I know in the past the Cardinals have believed in their ability to get guys to buy in if they were with the organization for a season. What are your thoughts on Goldschmidt and maybe what speculatively it might take to go get a guy like that on a one-year deal?
Well, I love the idea of Paul Goldschmidt wearing a Cardinal uniform. To me, he fits, with the exception of being a right-handed instead of a left-handed bat, he fits everything that they're looking for. He is an improvement defensively. I mean, he's a legit Gold Glover at first base, which is something they haven't had in ages. Here's a guy who you consistently can expect him to hit 300 and have 30 home runs and be up around 100 RBIs. I mean, the idea of Goldschmidt and Ozuna in the middle of your lineup, and I don't care who bets third, who bets fourth, who bets fifth, however it matches up, that is something that puts you in conversation with some of the other big lineups in the National League.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's that sort of transformative. So from that standpoint, I think it's sensational. You know, it was just a couple of years ago that Tony La Russa, who is very careful in the sort of praise that he gives out, Tony La Russa said that Paul Goldschmidt was the best player in baseball.
Wow.
And,
wow.
You know, to have that guy a couple of years removed, and I know the argument is, well, he's 31.
Right.
And, yes, it would only be the one-year guarantee, and what kind of extension could you sign? Well, what I did the other day was I tried to go through and find some comparables. And one of the closest that I came up with was Joey Votto. Because, again, here's a guy who, good hitter, hits for average, has some power, very good glove. Well, Joey Votto, I believe, is 36 years old now.
Is he really?
He's getting up there.
Holy
cow. Yeah,
he's
like 35, 36. He's getting up there. So I looked at his last 4 years from age like 31 through 35. They're pretty daggum good. So if Paul Goldschmidt, and it's apples, it's not apples to apples, I realize
sure,
that.
Sure.
But to expect that Paul Goldschmidt should continue to produce for the next 5 or 6 years is not unreasonable.
Right.
So like you brought up, the Cardinals used to have a tremendous amount of success bringing those sort of candidates in and kind of wowing them with St. Louis and everything. And I get that there's other teams now that maybe are appealing that weren't before, but St. Louis still has a lot of appeal. And there is a young core on this team, and there's a veteran core on this team. And Paul Goldschmidt, by all counts, I've talked to him a couple times post-game. The guy's like squeaky clean. I mean, he's the epitome of what you'd want to talk about, Cardinal way and clubhouse leader and all about the work. And, I mean, this is the sort of guy that you do kind of make that move for.
So what do you think that looks like? I know that we're just speculating. There's obviously no way we could possibly know, but what would you guess the going rate? Do you think for a guy like Goldschmidt, even a one-year deal, the starting point is a guy like Alex Reyes?
You know what? I don't know if teams are going to be as much on Alex Reyes as maybe some others, just from the sense that, you know, this is a guy who's coming back from the surgeries and
right,
stuff.
Right.
So if I'm Arizona, I'm asking for – now I might ask for Reyes just to see if he'll give them to me. But I think I'd be locked in on – I want Dakota Hudson.
Yep.
And then I want one of the other three, being Ponce de Leon, Weaver, and Gant. I want one of those other three pitchers to go with Hudson. And then I'm also asking for some other sort of prospect or so, position player-wise.
So two top-end pitching prospects and then something else. You think that could be enough?
I think it has to be very much having you in the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
That's where, you know, what other teams are willing to put in there may tweak it a little bit. So, I mean, I saw, you know, some reports of what Philadelphia put out there, and you might need a little bit more. But the thing with Hudson and Ponce de Leon and Gant and Weaver, and I know Weaver obviously had some struggles towards the end of the year, but they've all done it on the big league level.
Sure,
not just
sure.
Pure prospects. And that carries extra weight. So, you know, the fact that Ponce de Leon almost had no hitter in the big leagues and Hudson did what he did, I mean, that's not just, hey, these are AAA prospects that should do well. No, these are guys who have had success against major league hitters, albeit small sample size.
Hey, Brian, is there any way I could get you to stick around for one more segment?
Twist my arm with a turkey wing.
I'll do it, man. Done deal. I want to take a quick commercial break. We've got Brian Stahl with us, whose radio show, St. Louis Baseball Weekly, you can catch on our station every Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock. We're going to take a 3-minute commercial break. We'll have more with Brian when we come back. I got more Cardinals baseball offseason questions to hit him with. You guys don't want to miss it. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
ESPN 107.3 is the home of Rolla High School sports. Bulldogs football, basketball, baseball, and more plays here. With play-by-play from Matt Glenn, Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Joining us is Brian Stahl with the radio show St. Louis Baseball Weekly, which you can catch Fridays on this magical station from 1 to 2 o'clock. Brian, thanks for sticking around, man. I just had more to ask you. You just got so much wisdom.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's all good, man. It's all good. Fire away.
All right, so as we're looking at the outfield, certainly that is an area the team could look to address to bring in a power hitter, to bring in better defense at either corner outfield position. Bryce Harper was the name that everybody wanted to ask about and everybody wanted to talk about for the first week or two of free agency. But from what I have heard, things have quieted down in general about Bryce Harper, not just regarding the Cardinals, but just in general. I was assuming that he would be one of the first big pieces to fall before some of these other pieces moved. Have you heard much on the Bryce Harper front? Do you have any reason to believe that the Cardinals have a legit shot at being a player in the Bryce Harper sweepstakes?
Well, I agree things have been more quiet of late, and I think that just had more to do with Thanksgiving and kind of gearing up for the winter meetings that will take place the first week in December, which it would be atypical for a big-name Scott Boras client to sign that early. However, the fact that Bryce Harper is from Las Vegas, and the winter meetings are in Las Vegas, it just seems too perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
To not have the announcement on the center stage in the middle of the baseball universe in his hometown. I mean, it just is too perfect. In terms of the Cardinals having a legit shot, I think they had a more legitimate shot than what people were initially giving them credit for.
Okay.
And I think that's because people automatically assumed that Bryce Harper wanted this or Bryce Harper wanted that. And when you speak to people who are closer to Bryce Harper, either teammates or people who've covered him on a daily basis, they all have described Bryce Harper as a much more private person and someone who is not seeking the limelight, the likes of a New York or a Chicago, that I think a lot of people just automatically said, well, that's where he's going because he wants this. That's not to say that he doesn't wind up in one of those cities, but it wouldn't be for the lure of, you know, the bright lights, big city sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And
I just found that really interesting because, again, we were always led to kind of believe that Bryce Harper was all about, you know, kind of the big pizzazz and everything,
right.
Big headlines. And it was very much the opposite described to me. So it was like, well, you know what, in that regard, St. Louis would be a good fit. And the fact that he does, you know, have an appreciation for the game, that doesn't mean that there's not plays where you don't see him running out to first or doing certain things that you kind of bang your head. And that's kind of reflective of, you know, too much of today's game, unfortunately. So there is all that that goes with Bryce Harper as well. But also, again, talking with people, no one described him as a cheap or dirty player. And the same cannot be said for Manny Machado.
Right.
So even before
right.
the postseason, I had a lot of people who, you know, it was hard to find. Everybody acknowledged the talent, but the rest was not nearly as complimentary when it came to Machado. So do the Cardinals have an outside chance? Yeah, I think they could. But to be honest, just based on the way they go about things and speaking with Bill DeWitt III when they unveiled the new Victory Blue uniforms the other day, I just get the sense that the Cardinals, while they have the resources, would prefer, as they've done in the past, to, you know, have three or four sort of players that can help them versus trying to, as you know, Bill said, put all those eggs in one basket.
As you look at the crop of free agents that are out there, and we get outside of, you know, the big three or four names, the Machados and the Harpers of the world, who is someone you think the Cardinals should be targeting? Not necessarily whether or not they are, but who is someone out there that you look at and say, I think this is a player that could really make a difference for this team?
I think Tony Sipp would be an intriguing left-handed relief option.
Mm.
That's a guy who performed better as he was given more responsibilities the season went on. He did not, from some of the conversations that I've heard and speaking with some people, he felt strong at the end of the year, like he had more in the tank, like he wasn't used up, which, you know, is kind of trending upwards, which is a good way to go instead of, you know, and Andrew Miller has the big name and he has the track record and the resume, but again, that there's a lot of tread on those tires. And
right,
I'd
right.
be a little leery about that. Whereas Sipp, you know, could probably absorb a little bit more and is kind of seem to be wanting that kind of role. And obviously he's not going to have the same price tag either. So
sure.
That would be an intriguing guy to me. Going back to what we talked about last segment, if they made a trade for Paul Goldschmidt, that obviously creates a whole nother firestorm of events
right.
because if he's at first base, where do you play Matt Carpenter?
Yeah.
And, you know, the one issue, or let me rephrase, the main issue with Matt Carpenter is his arm, that shoulder, that balkiness there. So if it affects his throw, the last thing you want to do is put him at third base on a daily basis. Matt Carpenter won an all-star nod. Granted, he was hitting very well, but playing second base.
That's true.
And the way the game has changed today, you don't have to worry about that pivot because runners aren't taking guys out anymore.
Right, right.
So you could slide Carpenter to second base, but, oh, you have a Gold Glove caliber second baseman in Colton Wong. So, again, if I'm an opposing team, are you looking at Matt Carpenter? Does he have more appeal for you? He's nearing the end of his contract, so you wouldn't be tied in long-term with him. Colton Wong has a very team-friendly deal for a couple more years, so there's a lot of appeal there, and obviously he's a younger player. But, you know, Goldschmidt would set up a couple other moves as well, and you may not be doing as much free agency then if you make a big trade because that's going to necessitate some other moves. Likewise, what do you do with Carson Kelly, and what do you do with Jose Martinez? Those are two guys that really don't have spots on this team right now.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I was going to ask you, particularly about Martinez. Are there many scenarios in your mind where he's still a Cardinal when the season starts next year?
Not many.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there because obviously he is the ultimate in terms of being a professional and being a great teammate.
Yeah.
So if Jose Martinez is your fourth outfielder, he's not going to complain. And
right.
He's going to work just as hard and go about it. So, you know, there's no harm there. And certainly to have him able to come off the bench, he's done a great job pinch hitting before. If you had to put him at first base in a pinch, you know, in case of an injury in a game or something like that, you could do so. I know that's not your first choice, and I'm not campaigning for that.
Definitely not.
but then, you know, as a fourth, fifth outfielder, you know, and again, it's an incredibly team-friendly contract, and he's a great guy to have around. So from that regard, Jose Martinez makes a lot of sense. But could he bring a greater return for a greater need that the Cardinals have? You know, maybe he would be part of that package to go with the Dakota Hudson you know, another young pitcher, because then Arizona's getting a bat to help alleviate some of that offense they're going to lose by losing Goldschmidt.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's do the deal right now. I'm ready. Let's go get Goldschmidt. Hey, so as you look at this team heading into next season, who is a player that you've kind of targeted in your mind that you're expecting to see a big uptick in production from?
Well, I think Ozuna's the easy answer.
Yeah.
Just because, one, he should be healthy.
Right.
From every report that we've heard, he shouldn't be compromised. So that should be huge. And he made contact last year.
Sure.
You know, it's just it wasn't the power everybody was expecting. So if he makes the same kind of contact and feels better so that his swing isn't compromised, well, then you would expect that power to return. And, oh, yeah, by the way, is there a bigger motivating factor than the final year of your contract? So
there is not.
You know, he to me is the slam dunk where Ozuna should improve. You look beyond that, and I know it sounds crazy, but Jack Flaherty, who had a sensational rookie season, but with the lessons that he learned and having gone through a full season in the big leagues in terms of how to, I mean, the guy trains like crazy as it is. But I just think he's going to be that much better this next year from the lessons that he learned and being able to kind of recoup and become, you know, a year stronger and everything that goes with it.
All right, last question, and I'll let you get out of here. As you look at our minor league system, talk to me about a player that's got you very excited about their long-term Major League Baseball potential.
That one, you know what? We've seen so many guys who've come up.
Yep, yep.
You know, a guy that I'm hearing a lot about, well, Tommy Edman's getting some talk about, and he's a versatile switch hitter, which you don't see enough of anymore.
That's the truth.
And he's basically capable of playing second, short, and third. So there's definitely some intrigue there. But there's been a lot of buzz of late on the outfielder Lane Thomas, who they made room on the 40-man roster for.
Where's he at right now?
Apparently he had a very...
Is he double-A?
He was at double-A, I believe, yeah.
Okay,
so,
gotcha.
You know, he's kind of an interesting guy, and I don't know a lot about him. I just know that I've been hearing his name more and more, so
okay.
I was not surprised that they put him on the 40-man.
That's great, man. That's really good stuff. That's Brian Stull with St. Louis Baseball Weekly. You can catch his radio show on this station on Fridays from 1 to 2. Brian, thank you so much for taking that time out to visit with us. We sure appreciate you, brother.
You got it, man. It's always fun. Have a good one.
You too. Enjoy that sweet tryptophan sleep. We'll talk to you later, man. All right, this is the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Big thanks to Brian for joining us. Love talking to him about Cardinals baseball. We've got to take a three-minute commercial break. When we come back, we've got hot sauce, weak sauce. Don't go anywhere.
We're lonely and we don't have a lot of friends. Feel bad for us? Then follow Mid-Missouri's ESPN 107.3 online. Click like at facebook.com/ESPN1073 and follow on Twitter at ESPN1073.
Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. I just totally faked John out. Sorry. That was all on me. That's like on Sunday morning when Tim fakes us out, John.
You did a good job of it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That was a legit, like, open my mouth, start to talk, and then turn away. Hope you guys have enjoyed the show. We always appreciate you tuning in. Remember, if there's any part of the show that you missed, it's never too late. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio. Stay caught up on everything that's going on in the show.
Don't forget Alexa and your Google Home, too.
Absolutely. Just ask.
Just
ask.
They'll give
the gift of the Mid-Mo Sports Show to you on this holiday season. And what a gift to share. This segment is brought to you by Tamir Lumber & Sullivan, helping you build your dreams 1 2x4 at a time. That's Tamir Sullivan and Tamir Lumber & Sullivan. Let's get this party started. Let's do some hot sauce, weak sauce.
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce.
Sauce. Let's get this party started with a hot sauce.
Derek Johnson, the all-time leading tackler in the history of the Chiefs, with a touchdown for Kansas City.
I hope someday my voice cracks that much on the air and that we record it and memorialize it. Incredible.
It could happen.
It could happen, absolutely. Ex-Packers cornerback Will Blackman tweeted about a punishment that current Packers coach Mike McCarthy handed down during a losing streak the Packers were suffering through back in 2008. And let me tell you, friends, I love it. Now, I'm a parent of four children. I'm a big fan of creative punishments when the opportunity presents itself or the need presents itself. Now, as a head coach of a professional sports franchise, there are limitations to what you can do to get an entire team's attention. This was awesome, though. Will Blackman tweeted out, "When I was on the Packers in 2008, we lost four straight road games. Every time we lost, Coach McCarthy made sure each hotel we got was worse than the one before. They kept downgrading the quality of the hotel for the teams." Charles Woodson tweeted in response to this, "That's the bleep truth. I think my room was outside on the roof." He said one of their guys' rooms was so bad they were waiting for forensics to arrive to inspect it before they slept in it. One dude, James Jones, former receiver, went on to say he literally had us in a Motel 6. Now, I'm not a smart man, John, but I would think a good night's sleep would lend itself better to a win for the team. That being said, you want to get your team's attention, put them in a Motel 6. That'll get their attention. Let's go with I'm just calling this a crazy sauce.
That Hansel's so hot right now.
I don't know if this is hot or weak, but it's mind-boggling. I talked in the beginning of the show about the absurd one-on-one matchup between Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods playing for $9 million, which seems like a ridiculous amount of money to play for one round of golf. But, John, did you know that on a percentage basis for Phil Mickelson, winning that $9 million like he did is the equivalent of an average American winning around $1,600?
What? You mean he makes that much money?
Phil Mickelson is worth that much.
Wow. Wow.
It's incredible.
That's mind-boggling.
It's almost not worth getting out of bed for him.
Right.
For $9 million. And we know how Le'Veon Bell feels about $15 million.
Right.
So. Let's go with the weak sauce.
There's no crying in baseball.
Hugh Jackson coached the Browns. Hugh Jackson coached the Browns horribly. They didn't win games with Hugh Jackson, and yet he kept his job way longer than any human being ever should have. Hugh Jackson left and went to the Bengals. I believe the first, maybe the second week. No, it had to be. I think the second week that he was with the Bengals get to play division rival, the Browns. Hugh Jackson's former team that he didn't win games with. Hugh Jackson got blown out by the Browns. You can't make this stuff up.
That's pretty good.
Absolutely can't make this stuff up. Let's go with the weak sauce.
I'm fine. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
John, there is a very real code that exists amongst men, right? I know the world is very pro-woman power, all that stuff. But for a moment, let me take you into the world of men, okay? Inside of the world of men, the unwritten rule exists that you don't harm another man's privates, right? You don't kick them there. You don't punch them there.
Of course.
If you've got a problem with another man, that area is off limits. But apparently, Cordarrelle Patterson of course, who else? The New England Patriots committed the unforgivable sin. And while Jets defensive tackle Henry Anderson spent too much time on top of him in a dogpile situation in the NFL, Cordarrelle Patterson decided to get a full handful of Henry Anderson's manhood and latched on and squeezed and did not let go. Now, John, that's just wrong.
Aren't they wearing a cup in the NFL?
I don't know. I don't think so. He didn't react in such a way that he had a cup protecting it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that you generally need to protect that part of your body in football. I'm sure there are instances where freak things happen, but it's not like baseball where a ball bounces up and drills you there, you know?
Okay.
But apparently if you're playing against Cordarrelle Patterson, a cup is encouraged. Let's go with a hot sauce. In the great state of Ohio, if you are a Cincinnati Bengals fan watching your team get crushed by the Cleveland Browns, good news, as you may have walked into the stadium, you will have found vendors selling beer and selling water. And John, a picture was taken just outside of the Bengals stadium, where beer was being sold for $5, which is a quarter less than a bottle of water was being sold, which was being sold for $5.25. Beer is cheaper than water in Cincinnati.
Wow.
I mean, I think many of us want to live in a world where that's real.
Sure.
Where we can turn the tap on and beer flows freely. What a world to live in. I want a part of that. Let's go with the weak sauce.
You play ball like a girl!
Mississippi State played Ole Miss. Fun fact, I almost went to college at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Which would have completely changed the course of my life. In an egg bowl. In the egg bowl? I don't know. I guess it's a tradition that they play against each other. No idea why it's called the egg bowl. But things got ugly late in the game. Late in the third quarter, a brawl broke out that extended across essentially the entirety of both fields as players were all over the field. Helmets were being grabbed. Idiocy ensued. And in what had to be an unprecedented situation, I've never seen it happen before, referees assessed an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and I'm quoting here, on all players from both teams. Literally every single player on both teams had a foul called against them. Every single player on both teams. Let's close out with the weak sauce.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I guess a hot sauce would be Mike Yeo got fired. The bad news is Joel Quenneville has not been hired for the Blues. And the bigger weak sauce is our team continues to suck. The Blues are not good, friends. They're not good at all. We just lost a game giving up 5 goals. 5! To one player. Losing 8-4 to the Winnipeg Jets. Patrick Laine, we're making him look like the greatest player on the planet. 5 goals to one player. I truly can't wrap my mind around why this Blues team is as absolutely putrid as they are. They are horrible. But the great news is you can catch all the Blues coverage here on ESPN Mid-Missouri 107.3, home of your St. Louis Blues. Look, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Blues have a legit shot at the number one pick in the draft. And honestly, at this point, I think that idea excites me more than this team getting hot and trying to make a run at the playoffs. I mean, what else is there to say about it? Hope you've enjoyed the show. This is the Minmo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. He's John Francis. I'm Justin Renaud. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this show every Monday here on this station from 4 to 6 o'clock. Just about gave the wrong times there. From 4 to 6, subscribe to our podcast. Go find us on Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, or iTunes.
Or Alexa. Or Google Home.
All of them. They all love us. But until next week, I'm out!
The Mid-Mo Sports Show, a presentation of Mid-Missouri Media. Heard Mondays from 4 to 6 on ESPN 107.3.